I love Austin, man. I've only been there twice, and both times it was in July, and I like couldn't breathe. It was so hot.
Sure, yeah.
Instant sweaty.
My girlfriend and I moved here together, and she had never been to Austin. So we came just to visit and check out some places in August. And it was like walking through downtown in 102 degrees.
Yeah.
Having to stop in a little convenience store just to drink a full bottle of water before we could continue on.
It's brutal, man. But it's a cool city. I really love it. Food's awesome. I don't know. Yeah, it's been years.
It's clean. It seems safe. And you can like go to the suburbs. You can go to like nature pretty easily from the city. So I like that. Having the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Where were you before?
I was in LA. I was like right outside. Well, I was living in downtown for a while. Then most recently I lived just outside of downtown, and I come from the East Coast. So.
Okay. So you've been all over the place. So why'd you leave LA? Like, I know a lot of people who have left LA in the last couple of years. So I'm just curious.
I mean, like, I think LA is a great place. And obviously like the community there, the scene is huge. So many people are out there. Like so many people that do what I do are out there. So I was able to connect with them, but I am not a very like social person. Like you're not going to catch me like playing out like a lot of gigs or going to a lot of shows even, or like parties, whatever. Like I'd meet with a couple friends, maybe once or twice a year, and then NAMM would come around. Everybody comes to LA, can kind of hang out with everybody, but that's pretty much the extent to the social side of things for me.
Yeah.
So that was really the only appeal, because I don't need to live anywhere in particular for my work. So I can live anywhere. And that just kept eating away at me. And then there was some stuff that went down like throughout the course of my time in LA that just made me feel like progressively like less safe and less like excited to be in the city, you know, like just gets dirtier and less safe every year, I felt. So I was kind of over that.
That I've heard a very similar story from other people who left LA, and a lot of them went to Texas or Denver, actually, which is why I'm at now. And I love it here. Well, speaking of you and the podcast, somebody who said that they love the podcast told me I should have you on maybe like a year ago.
Oh, cool. Shout out to whoever that was.
Yeah, whoever that was. Shout out to you. But yeah, I've been following your stuff since then, and like you've got a lot of really good content. Like you're always featuring new gear, especially like on your YouTube channel and other places. So I assume you probably have a lot of like free toys that people just send you and you just like feature them all the time.
Yeah. And on the note of like talking about just moving, that was the biggest difficult part about moving, I think, was packing up all the gear, because I just have Rubbermaid bins of MIDI controllers, random little synths, like random little pieces of gear, like from the years where it's like, how do you even get rid of like stuff that I can't even sell? Like a Mark II version of something that's got a Mark III now or something, like something that's so out of date, like keys that have gone yellow just from time. But I'm very fortunate in that respect that I love making music. I want to be making music like as much as possible. And like the tools to do that just show up at my door. Like, all the time. Yeah. So I'm very fortunate in that.
Yeah, me too. Like I don't mind getting free stuff, but I'm the same way. I've got like a whole bin just full of like MIDI controllers that I haven't even touched in years. And it's like, if they're like more obscure, like how do you even sell those?
Yeah, like you can't if they're obscure, or if they're like, you know, just that much out of date, it's like you're stuck with them, I guess. I don't even know how.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Together combined, we could probably start like a Radio Shack or like a Goodwill for like expired MIDI controllers.
You know what I want to do? This project that I've wanted to do is like take the old MIDI controllers. And I don't know if you've seen these like kind of framed old tech, like they'll take like a PSP or like an old like Xbox controller, and they'll like take it apart and they'll display it inside of a frame with like all the components laid out really nicely.
Oh, that's cool.
I was thinking to try to do that with some of my old controllers and maybe like sell them for like next year's charity event or something.
Yeah.
But that would be cool.
It already looks like you have like controllers turned into artwork on your wall behind you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a little blurry back there, but I try to keep some cool stuff on display. Like the top right up there, it's like blurry, but that's Novation Circuit 1. And I keep that there because it's like, that's the first piece of gear that I ever got for free. So I like to keep that up on the wall.
Yeah, it's a nice memento.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah, I mean, you also make a lot of like your own music, obviously, too. Rocking Ableton Live. I saw your video recently on like why you weren't excited about 12. I thought that was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah.
I was laughing and like watching
a little
that
bit
yesterday.
Of a divisive take, I guess, but just my opinion.
Oh, it's fair. I mean, it's everybody's got opinions. That would be the worst part of being a developer for a popular music software is like everybody has their own thing of what they want. Some people want more live stuff. Some people want production stuff. And it's like, how do you please all those people? There's no way you can. It'd be a tough job for sure.
I would just develop features that are like in the title of the actual thing, you know, live. I would just develop some features for that.
Yeah.
It's a building year. We'll call it that. It's a building cycle. Ableton 12, it's a building year.
It's a building release.
Yeah.
They did have the performance pack. I actually, after this episode with Brian Funk, I'm doing a full breakdown of like all the main features for 12. So it goes, we go pretty in depth with it.
Cool. I hope you go into the performance pack because
we do.
I want to know more about, I've gone into it a little bit. And that was to me the most exciting thing about the announcement. But then it also just felt like, oh, here's this like tacked on, here's a little tacked on thing, Max for Live pack. Because it seems really, really cool, but I've had a few like buggy issues with it or I just don't know how to use it well enough, but I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I think a native integration would have been nice rather than an added pack, which
and
I guess
dummy
it is.
Clips. They love their dummy clips.
A lot of dummy clips.
It just
clips.
Feels like a workaround, doesn't it? It feels like an official version of a workaround.
Yeah, I could see that. It does seem kind of like almost an afterthought as a pack release that they partnered with somebody to do. I don't know. But the performer and the variation devices in the performance pack are I'm most excited about. And I go deeper into that later with Brian in the episode following this one. But this is your episode. Like, I would love for people to get to know you a little bit better. And then maybe we can go through. I mean, you've reviewed, I don't know how many hundreds of MIDI controllers and devices.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a great resource for a community of producers or people who are just looking at different gear of different options and types. And I don't know how you release so much new content all the time. Like, I'm exhausted just thinking about that for you.
Well, I appreciate hearing that because sometimes I feel like I'm not releasing enough. So it's good to hear that perspective on the other side.
Yeah. I mean, I'm releasing an episode for the podcast every 2 weeks or so, and I think that's a lot. So,
well, podcast is a lot because you got to sit here and you got to do however long these episodes are, you know, like 1 hour to 2 hours. And
it's true.
But using this cool backend stuff to edit it, it seems like. So that's, I just saw an ad for this. This is off topic, of course, but this Riverside situation, like this seems legit. I just saw another podcast like do an ad for it and it's like, oh, wow.
Riverside's awesome, man. I was using Zencastr and I've tried like Zoom. I've tried a lot of different options. As far as the quality and just like the robust features that come with it, I highly recommend Riverside. I really love this thing. It hasn't failed me yet. Knock on wood.
That's awesome.
Although I will say if anybody decides to use this, like make sure you're not using a VPN because sometimes that has been buggy. But yeah, this is great. And they have like an AI thing that can do like Instagram reels for you too. It could do like a quick.
That's what I saw. And like cutting clips and cutting out dead air and all that stuff. Captions.
Subtitle captions. Yeah, it does a lot of that. I've been going a little more to the AI stuff to try to help with the podcast editing. I don't know if you tried any AI features for your own content to like streamline your workflow, but
I used ChatGPT to plan, like I did an ambient album earlier this year and I used ChatGPT to like create the entire like plan and schedule for how I was going to make and produce and finish that album. So like that was one pro like AI thing that I've been doing.
Yeah, ChatGPT is insane. Have you ever heard of AbletonDrummer.com?
I don't think so. Maybe it sounds familiar.
He actually just integrated ChatGPT into his website as like a support chat.
That's the dream.
Well, yeah, I was just playing with it and it was insane how quickly it was like delivering certain devices or like info or whatever I needed related specifically to Ableton Live.
I hope like YouTube will integrate something like that. Instagram has it a little bit in DMs. Like you can set up like automated DMs based on like keywords or something, but I field so many questions from a lot of beginners, like a lot of the same question, like just in my comments all day, every day. And it would be great to set up an auto response that can just quickly like send them to a resource or like get them what they need because it's like hard to keep up with.
You totally can. And it's relatively affordable for people to create their own chatbots for support like that. So I think people would probably love that if you took the time and just fed it your resources and then let do all the work for you.
HR.AI coming soon.
Yeah, there you go. The exclusive pre-release. Yeah. Maybe share a little bit about your Ableton Live world. Do you have any favorite killer tips or any content you've been teaching lately that people seem to be interested in with Ableton Live specifically?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I am a sampling kind of guy. I guess that's why I was a little underwhelmed with 12 new features, because there's a lot of synth-driven and sound design-y stuff. I love just sampling and sampling things into oblivion, like sample something and then run it through some more stuff and then sample it again and then transpose it down an octave and then transpose and then sample it and then transpose it back up an octave through another effect or something like that. So I love doing that. I mean, all of the granular stuff in Live, granulator, pitch loop 89 is something that I really like to use.
Me too.
I use a lot of that in my ambient album, and if I just need to add some nice ambient texture, or if something's just a little too dry, you know, and it needs to sound more ghostly, like pitch loop 89 is awesome. That's definitely just a max for Live device. Is that just free? I forget now.
It's its own pack, but it does come with some really solid presets. The drum glitch A and B are insane for drum glitching sounds. I use that all the time.
I just drop it in like stock, usually, like just the straight up, the stock preset. And I just try to set it all to random so that it's just grabbing random parts at all times. And then just a not heavy on the dry wet, just like a little bit of that on top of an ethereal vocal or some type of melodic instrument. It creates like this crazy stuff happening all around you and potentially like pitching it up, like create these sparkles around. But I love the sound of that. And that's an example of something where I'll run a sound through that. I will sample, like record that, print that to audio, and then mangle it even more from there and chop it and do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really cool effect. If people haven't played with that, definitely check that out. It's actually modeling the Publicent DHM 89, which is like a real kind of glitchy pitch delay thing.
Nice.
I've never played with a real one. I don't think they're very common, to be honest, but pretty fun. Yeah, Pitch Loop 89 is really dope. So you do a lot of sampling kind of stuff. I see you playing with the Push 3. Are you really enjoying the Push 3 for that kind of thing?
Yeah, like on that front, like that whole setup behind me, that is like a sample standalone station.
Yeah.
So like Push 3 is the brain. I've done a video on this setup behind me, but it's a really cool thing where like Push 3 is the part in the brain or whatever you want to say. But then I've got the SP404 Mark II running into it. So I sample instruments through the 404 Mark II and then into the Push 3. So I've got my like Yamaha Reface CP. It's really nice, like electric keyboard sounding, like dreamy electric keyboard, that classic sound. That goes into the SP404, and then I can plug in like my guitar. I'm always like doing weird stuff with guitar. That runs into the 404. And what's cool about that is the 404 has skip back, which you can grab like the last 40 seconds of audio that you just played without ever having, it's like capture MIDI, but for audio basically.
Nice. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. So like if I'm just sitting there like jamming, and all those inputs in between the 404 and the push is the Microcosm, the hologram pedal.
Oh yeah.
So like if I am just jamming and playing something and I like what I just played, I'll just hit the skip back. And then on the 404, I can like manipulate that even more, you know, pitch, stretch, whatever, 404 effects, then run it through the hologram, then record it into Live. It's cool. Just this whole chain. So I'm just sitting over there all the time, just not really like writing music, like not really writing a song, but just like making interesting sounds, weird sounds. Yeah. But whether it's like my voice, guitar, the keyboard, percussion instruments, whatever, I get some really cool textures out of that. And then the cool part about that is like that all gets recorded to the Push 3. And that's just like a brainstorming session. It's not very linear. It's not very like making a track or anything like that. But then I can just cloud, you know, like, oh, come back over to this desk and open it up. And then it's like, okay, now how do we work with this material?
Yeah.
I've been really loving that workflow because you don't get caught up in like, okay, I'm making this kind of song right now and it needs to sound like this and the melody needs to work like this against whatever. It's just like a much more free process. I find myself more inspired doing it that way.
Yeah, I've been hearing more and more people say that they're not using Push 3 necessarily for live performance, even though you definitely could if you wanted to. But like the stability of it and the workflow of it, of just forcing you away from your computer and standalone, is kind of cool. I love that setup that you have with that standing desk where it's like its own station, like facing away from your computer, but yet you could still, like, you know, Wi-Fi drop it to your computer and continue where you left off. That's a really cool idea. I have several friends who have a similar setup like that. And that's kind of like, I don't know, there's something when you step away from a mouse clicking computer screen setup.
Yep.
I think it gets you in the flow state a little better.
I think for sure. And like you mentioned, like that's a standing desk too, like standing back there.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel like I'm in an active, like, performance kind of mode, rather like exactly like you said, like sitting at a desk, keyboard, mouse. To me, that doesn't feel like very ergonomic, or like it's not the same thing as standing up and like playing guitar, playing bass, singing, like feeling the music like that.
Yeah.
So it is really cool. I just like stumbled upon like making that setup or something. Like I think like that's how kind of, I don't know, the YouTube stuff and the brand deals or whatever, like I try to make it as cohesive and as possible and make it as in service to like my creative process as possible. So that desk was a brand deal. It was like to do a video on the desk. So I was like, well, I already have a desk. What am I going to do? Set up a secondary setup. And it became like one of my favorite things in my studio. So like, I'm super glad that I did that.
Yeah. It looks just like my desk. Do you know what brand that is?
It's one of those Amazon Fezibo. Is that it? Fezibo standing desk.
It looks just like mine. It's different. I don't have a Push 3. I was going to order one and then I ended up buying a condo and I'm like,
I feel that.
Do I need this really? Maybe right now? Probably not.
Yeah. I was stoked because I first got the Push 3 while I was traveling and I was in South Korea and I got it when I was there and I was like moving around the country and I really got to test like that portable element. I mean, the thing is heavy, no doubt about that. But I got to like, I used that as an opportunity to document my first experiences with it and traveling with it and like being out and like in another country and like a foreign place to me with a device that's like, I don't have to connect my laptop to something. And now I'm carrying these two things.
Yeah.
It's just that much more simple. So I'm glad that having that experience being my first experience with Push 3, that was like a really cool thing.
Yeah, there's still like firmware features and updates. I think that it's going to make it even better because there's still some bugs that need squashed for sure. And all the times I played it and what I've heard. But I mean, that just comes with any new piece of gear. You're going to have to update that firmware, especially when it's something like this that has basically a computer inside of it.
For sure. And Ableton is especially good at like releasing a firmware update and breaking something that wasn't broken before. So there's always that side of things too. But I'm used to it. Like the amount of like, when I get a piece of gear and like maybe it even hasn't come out yet or something, like, and you're dealing with a pre-release build, it's just, and I don't get too frustrated by that. But yeah, I criticized like the 12 release or whatever, but you know, a lot of people responded and were like, well, they need to release more synths because they've got Push and they want to really like drive home the standalone nature of Push and they need to make new synths for it because they're trying to, you can't load VST plugins on it or anything, of course. So
yeah, I hear that argument too. I think Meld is cool. I think Drift is probably my favorite synth that they've come out with in a really long time. It's got that really analog quality to it, and I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with Drift.
I agree. Like, it seems like the hype that happened when Wavetable released, like, I get it from a sound design perspective. People love Wavetable. But Drift, exactly like you said, like a warm analog thing, and then plus the MPE nature of the pads.
Yeah.
With using that setup over there, I gravitate to Drift a lot because it doesn't, it's not a, I don't know how to say this, a synthy sounding synth, you know what I mean? Like you can get an organic sound out of it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm always going for. So yeah, I think Drift is really cool.
Yeah, it's really unpredictable because it has that like slight pitch deviation with the two oscillators that just gives it that warmer, like kind of fatter, thicker sound.
Yeah.
So, I mean, other Ableton Live stuff, like, do you have like any favorite go-to audio effects that like you typically use in a lot of your sounds?
You know, like I use mostly all Ableton stock stuff. Like if you, like I do a lot of streaming and I'll make music on stream. And if you watch any of those, like you're not seeing me use like, especially audio effects, like I'm using all the basic stuff. I'm just using EQ8, and like, just like I have a basic audio processing rack that goes on every track and it just has compressor, EQ, and stock reverb on it. And that is like a default thing that loads on every track. People always ask what it is. For me, it's like something that makes the mixing process go a lot faster and like gets the music sounding better faster. Because I just have 8 macros set up for those 3 devices in this rack where it's like, oh, if I want to get the lows out of there, okay, I've got a low cut, high cut. I can adjust it. I can boost the highs or boost the lows if I need to. Reverb, dry, wet, or and then decay time. Like that kind of stuff. I don't get too fancy with it because, like I said, I like to do this sampling and a lot of that stuff is like, okay, the audio is going in, or it's like I'll sample some plugins or whatever. But I'm not using a ton of like external plugins. It's all Ableton stock. My mastering chain is mostly Ableton stock as well. I just like stumbled in. Like I don't know anything about mixing mastering. So if people like the way my music sounds, then they can listen to what I have to say. If they think my music sounds like crap, then don't listen to what I have to say. But I just like have this rack that is EQ8. I can probably look at it right in front of me. It's EQ8. And then
glue compressor. You can also share your screen if you ever wanted to.
Oh, I can definitely do that. There's one third-party plugin in there. It's J37 from Waves. That's
I love
baked
that.
Into my mastering chain.
It's a good tape sound. Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I used to use the J37 tape machine all the time in Waves. And then in the early days of like the M1 chips coming out, like all their plugins broke for a while and it took them forever to update. And I just never went back.
That was a frustrating time in my life.
Yeah.
that was like a war story. You just said I just had like a little bit of PTSD.
Yeah, for real.
But my mastering chain is just EQ, J37, glue compressor, gentle limiter, and then OTT on the end of it. And I throw on that for most of the music that I work on. And then I usually have to do a little adjusting from there, but it brings everything up, brings the levels up, gives me the character that I want. Like that J37 does a lot for the character, and then brighten things or darken things depending on the certain track, but really simple stuff. I'm not like I think you've probably had a lot of really nerdy Ableton heads on here. I don't know. Did you go to music school, like traditional like music school?
I actually went to like a tiny private school in the middle of nowhere of Indiana for marketing.
Oh.
I did a music minor, and then I was like, I don't want to sit in an office the rest of my life. This sounds like garbage. So I ended up moving to New York and Manhattan, went to DubSpot to learn Ableton.
Oh,
and
wow.
So
cool.
Way back in the day when DubSpot was still a great place to be.
Oh, so you probably had a good like music education experience then.
Yeah, I was pretty fortunate to be able to be surrounded for a couple of years by some really solid people in the music community. So I was very fortunate. Yeah,
I went to a state university and was a music major, and they pretty much like actively hated that anybody would want to be doing electronic music or like even be creating original music, because a lot of the program, it was focused around like classical and jazz. And obviously with those, it's like, jazz, you're playing the real book all day. Classical, you're playing, you know, repertoire, the classical repertoire. And then there was a world music aspect where you could learn African drum and dance, which is cool.
That is cool.
I had a couple of really great professors, and the rest of them were actually like so bad. But one, she was like, her name is Jing Wang, and she's from China. She's one of the world's only, what do you call it when somebody's like the best at their instrument? Virtuoso.
Yeah.
She's like one of the only one of those in the world. And then, but she also is super into like Maxim SP and stuff like that, and like weird electronic stuff. So she would do crazy processing with her Erhu and stuff. So she had a big influence on me there. Awesome. And they encouraged me to like pursue it or whatever with electronic music. I don't know how I started talking about school, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's part of your journey. It's your episode. I mean, and honestly, like, I don't know. I hear a lot of people being like, well, if you had to recommend a school for me to go to for music, I'm like, I probably wouldn't go to a college unless I'm trying to teach.
Yeah.
Because like you're going to come out in so much debt. And in the end of the day, like it depends what you want to do. But like if you're trying to work at a studio, or if you just want to like have your own home studio and work out of, like you don't need to go to college for that.
And also like if anybody's thinking about a college or something, you can go to any of the like all the college music programs. They have concerts at the end of every year. So if you're curious about like what's happening at these programs, like what they're actually doing and at the concert at the end of the year or the end of the semester, that's supposed to be like the best of the best in the progress. You can go see what they're working on and totally. See if it excites you. But I definitely agree, because my school was focused on pumping out like teachers, basically, like go teach in the local high school, go be a band director or a choir director. And a long time ago, I thought that's what I wanted to do. But I found other ways of like doing teaching and education outside of the school environment. So I'm fortunate. It's kind of like if I could go back and change it, I'm not sure if I would, because I ended up here anyway. So, you know, but traditional education is tough, especially on the electronic music side of things, if you don't want to go into a ton of debt.
Yeah, preferably not be in debt the rest of my life.
Yeah. And you can learn a lot on YouTube, obviously. But the problem with that is like you as a student who wants to get into this know the least amount about the subject. So you're going to, how could you possibly craft your own curriculum? You know,
that is true. Yeah, that's the other part of it is too, is like a lot of people just don't know what to search. They don't know where to start. And so then they're getting these like random pieces from like different pieces from different puzzles that doesn't actually come full circle for them. A lot of times they're just searching random videos on YouTube.
Yeah, I've tried to really be thoughtful about that. So I started developing like series for the channel instead of like single one-off videos. Mm. Like I did a whole music theory series and then a whole Ableton Live series. That way it's like I can at least build people up on some foundational knowledge and not assume that they already learned one thing over here or they have gaps in their knowledge. Oh, the reason I brought that up is because I was talking about like different like types of personalities and musicians and things like that. And I always remember in music school, there's like just people that loved that environment. I obviously did not love that environment, but there are people that would like sit there in a practice room for, you know, 8-9 hours. And that's kind of the music school vibe. Or they'd get excited. Oh, did you know that this is like a D half diminished minor 7-9 flat 11. It's like, I don't care, bro. I just want to make some music. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where I'm coming from. So especially on some of the technical side of things, I just dive right into the process of making stuff. And I try to avoid interfacing with the more deep, like, you know, all these devices that have matrices and all this crazy, crazy routing. Unless I'm trying to get a specific sound or a specific thing, I kind of just skip all that. And that's probably why I'm more lean into the sampling thing, is because I can like, I can make a sound, I can get the sound, then I can do that without, you know, coding, which is what I want to avoid.
Right. Yeah, same. I'd rather just use Maxwell devices and not be somebody who's making all of them.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Like I made a collection of, every time I try to make a sample pack or I just made a collection of instruments for the first time, it's just a laborious process. And I don't know if it's like, I don't know if live is not very conducive to doing that. Like making a sample pack is like this clunky kind of experience.
You should try this really cool Max for Live device called Resampler Pro.
Resampler Pro. I'm going to write that down.
Shameless plug.
Did you make it?
Actually, I personally didn't make it. Most of the work was with Toby Hunka, Ableton drummer. I commissioned him and was like, yo, do you want to help me make this sick pack that solves problems for people who want to do sample packs? And so he created a device. I'll share it with you. Yeah. And I'll drop it in the show notes too for anybody else listening that maybe missed that. But yeah, this is it basically is just, you just load it onto an audio track. You just hit like 3 buttons and then it'll sample whatever sound. So like if you have an external instrument or if you have like a plugin that you want a sample of a sound for whatever reason to load into a sampler later and just like save that as an instrument, it makes it really easy.
That's awesome, because, you know, you probably know this, but like making samples and that kind of thing, it's like, okay, route this track into that track, then freeze or consolidate it. Now go find that file in your Finder. Now go title it, because it puts that tag at the end.
Yep.
Do that for the 100 samples in your pack, basically.
Yeah, we were trying to even make it so it did all of that and then loaded all of it into a sampler instrument for you to play back perfectly, but the API is pretty limited. In Ableton Live, so there's only so much we could do, but it was definitely a learning process, and I'm really glad Toby and I are still friends, because I was like, well, what if we did this? And he's just like, okay.
It could tear people apart. Yeah. Well, I'm going to check that out for sure.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. But anyway, so like you're huge into controllers and controllerism and everything like we talked about earlier. Like what made you really get into that side of things? Like what really, I guess, was the gateway controller for you, or how did you get into it?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know if I can remember the gateway controller, but I can remember when I was like getting into electronic music, it was kind of at this like perfect time. Like I want to say like 2008, 2009 and beyond. When I first started making music, I was doing like singer-songwriter stuff, like acoustic guitar and singing and writing like really just, you know, traditional. I was a teenager then, so like love songs, you know, emo music.
I love emo music.
Yeah. And then when I was doing that, I was like, then started producing my own stuff, like producing, like I was a teenager in my like parents' house, you know, on a crappy Windows laptop. But through that, I started learning about like DAWs and eventually stumbled into Ableton Live. And around that time, there was some cool stuff happening in controllerism, like the monome, like people had monomes and I was like, what is that? Like, what is that thing? And then like Launchpad light shows were like really big. And I was like, well, this is cool and the music is cool, but I don't want to just make a light show. I want to like play the music. You know, I want to use these things as instruments and that's kind of what they look like they could do.
Yeah.
And then there's all these like little controllers around. Like I remember watching like Grimes did a AEXP session where she's like playing on the floor. I don't know if she's using any controllers in that, but she's like sitting on the floor in this California radio station, like this 404 or some SPSX something, like in big Roland synth just looping and making this electronic music. And that, and then I was like, all right, like how this software seems like this is what it's made for. Like, how can I do this? How can I interface with that? And I actually remember like I bought a launch pad. That might have been like the first controller I had, but returned it probably a week later. I think I got it as a gift or something like for my birthday. And then I got it, unboxed it. And then I had the classic thing of like, I thought I was just going to be able to buy this and do it. Like, what do you mean? Like, I don't just push the buttons and it doesn't just make the music. So yeah. I think I ended up returning it. I don't know. I just love small tech for some reason. Like, I just have like small stuff. Like random, like was Tamagotchi.
It looks like a Game Boy. Was that a Game
Boy? Yeah, it's not a Game Boy, but it's like an AmberNick. It's like an emulator.
Oh, cool.
I just always loved like these little pieces of tech. So however it happened, I ended up back into electronic music and controllerism and learned a little bit more. And then I ended up with like the small like Novation controllers, like a Launch Key Mini, a Launch Pad Mini, and like a Launch Control. They don't even make it anymore, but it's like the two rows of knobs and the one row of pads. So I put together this like trio of controllers and started messing with doing performances around that. And around that time, that's around when I was experimenting in college and stuff. And I had to put together a performance. Well, I was putting together a performance for my senior recital, which was going to be all original music. And then one of the pieces was going to be entirely like electronic and looping and done in live. So I used that set of controllers, Launch Key Mini, Launch Pad Mini, Launch Control, performed it at the senior recital. And actually this ties into like how I plan to start a YouTube channel anyway, because I performed it and the video from the recital didn't turn out so great. So I shot it at home. I just like set up a camera and just performed it as I did at the recital as it was. And then I posted that and then it ended up being my first YouTube video. So it's a track called Rain. It's still up. If anybody searches Tetro Rain, you can see like my first controllerism performance.
How long ago was that?
I graduated college in 2014. So it must have been like, you know, just under 10 years ago, I guess. From there, I just started like, I realized like, okay, I really like this electronic music thing. I was finishing out college, trying to figure out what I was going to do. I ended up, you know, doing a lot of teaching gigs. But one thing that was really interesting is like, I was teaching in a lot of after school programs and then eventually went on to become like a director of an after school music program. But like production and doing cool stuff with these electronic instruments, like I'd bring my controllers with me to like teaching kids. And I taught from preschool. When my first gig was like preschool in the daytime and then eighth grade, first through eighth grade during the evening. And it's like if you bring in like a little launch pad and you set things up, or if you let kids like record their voice and like loop it and stuff, it's like, like I was integrating it into the education side of things. I was trying to develop my own music and performances and things like that. I remember I still have it. I have an APC 40, the original APC 40. I remember buying that on eBay.
That was my first love. That was my first controller I really loved was the APC. Yeah.
Yes. Like that. There was a different vibe back then. you know, 2014 and, you know, maybe that 5 year period or so, or even less, but like, it was like these glory days of like, because there weren't so many controllers out there. It was like the big companies making stuff. Yeah. And then the landscape of artists that were posting like controllers and videos. Like if you think of like Daedalus doing his thing and Memorex doing stuff, like people doing stuff that maybe traditionally would have been like, oh, you need these big synthesizers and sequencers to do this. You need all this big expensive gear, or like stuff that's like, oh, normally that would be done on an MPC, but this person's doing it with a controller in their laptop. Like that stuff like really sparked things for me. It's like, okay, like I have access to pretty much these same tools. I want to make this stuff and I want to continue to make that stuff. So it just kind of devolved, I guess I'm calling it devolved from there, where it's like more controllers, like figuring it out. I got the bug. Like I just had to keep getting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many like MIDI controller companies now that are popping up and disappearing and then popping up and disappearing. Like I was really sad to see Sensel Morph went away. They've made some really fun, like really easy, simple, like MPE stuff that you could travel with. I was really into their thing for a little bit.
Yeah, the Morph was great. I mean, shout out to them. They rolled that technology into probably a much more lucrative business where they're doing like the track pads for some major laptop company or Windows in general. I don't know. But
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. They basically took that technology and repurposed it. But the Morph, yeah, that's a fantastic controller. There was a time too, like Livid Instruments, they're still around, but like everybody had a different weird controller set up. And now, like you said, like it's definitely more homogenized now, where like when a new controller comes out, a lot of them look the same. It's not as exciting, because to me, what I liked about that time is like, oh, this controller came out and it's got, oh, that one has pads, keys and knobs. Oh, but that one's got these weird like touch strips on it, or these weird, like I had a Numark controller. There's probably still a video on my channel from very early days. It was a Numark MIDI controller. It was like about this size, big circle in the middle, was a big knob you could turn, and it had an LED ring around that circle, and then like 8 pads on each side, like 2 rows of 4. This really, it felt like a PlayStation controller. Triggers on the top, two columns of 4, big knob in the middle. Something is telling me that it was wireless. It couldn't have been wireless. It had to have had a receiver or something. But that was cool. I have it somewhere, but it's like one of those controllers that if you keep it too long, it gets sticky. Do you have anything that has gotten sticky over time?
Yeah, usually when my dog slobbers on it now.
No, there's some like, there was some plastic like in production, or I don't know what it is. Somebody in the audience might know, like plastic where it, as it aged, it got sticky. I think even some push ones are like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like you're talking about, yeah, like certain pads can like stick a little more.
Not even the pads, the actual like hardware.
Oh, weird. Whatever.
Yeah, it's crazy. Oh, no. But the time when controllers were like weird and it was like a new burgeoning thing, that's kind of what I miss. Now everything's the same pads, keys, and knobs controller. So I get excited anytime someone releases something that's not that.
Hey, just wanted to let you guys know, this episode is sponsored by Luit. They made the Pure Tube mic, which I'm talking in right now, with very minimal compression. If you haven't heard me talk about the Pure Tube mic yet, it's a professional studio microphone with sound optimized for vocal recordings, although you could use it for more than that if you wanted to. It features a new and unique circuit, and the signal path is completely free from semiconductors and capacitors, so this hand-selected tube can perform its magic with ultra, ultra low noise. The noise floor is only 7 dBA, so that's pretty sweet, and it's perfect for modern productions, even with really heavy processing. Noise is not going to be an issue. I'm obsessed with this thing. It comes with a shock mount, a magnetic pop filter, which looks like it's from outer space, and a sturdy transport case that you could probably throw off the top of your house if you wanted to, and it won't break. This thing's amazing. For the price, I think it's worth having a really legit professional studio microphone, especially if you want to do anything with vocals or even recording your acoustic guitar, whatever it might be. This microphone rocks. I'm a huge fan, and I'm only talking about it because I want to. Thanks to Luit for sending me this microphone, and I think you should check it out as well. Look at the links in the show notes for more info, and back to the episode. Yeah, it kind of seems like in the controller world, there's not a ton new under the sun outside of like the whole like MPE I mean, you've got like, you know, like the Rolly was kind of like a groundbreaking thing. And yeah, it was
C-board.
Yeah. And you're just like, oh, wow, we've got like, we can play between notes and it's like smooth gliding. There's like all this like MPE stuff coming out now. But I'm looking forward to seeing like what the next generation of controllers really look like. And I don't even know what that's going to be, but it's going to be really fascinating because I think it's probably going to integrate with more like motion sensor technology.
I think there's definitely a world for that. But we've seen that sort of with the Miu Miu gloves kind of thing, like Imogen Heap's always performing with those. I think, like, do people really want to interact? Like, I even think about this with VR and AR. Do people really want to interact with music making in that way? Mm. Or is it just like the gloves? For sure, you can get a lot of mileage out of that. But do you want to do that for every performance? Or do you want to sit at your desk and put on some gloves?
It's a fun party trick. Like, I think at shows or whatever, people are like, oh, that's cool. And people get excited. Yeah. But like the utility of it for me is not like really there.
Yeah, but to me, it's like, can we split the difference between like utility and a creative approach? You know, like, can it be just as useful as it is creative, where it's not super boring and just utilitarian, but it's not so out there that like I kind of have to be in the right mindset to even use this thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, usually the most successful products solve a problem, right? So like what problems are people having with interfacing with controllers that could be solved in the future, I guess, is a good question. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Artifon is one company. I don't know if you've used any of their stuff. They make the Orbuzz. They made Instrument One, was their first instrument. Instrument One was sort of this, it's like the attempt at a guitar controller where it's got like these like silicone or not, maybe silicone, like strum thing. And then it's got frets and strings, but not real strings. That was their first attempt. Then they came out with the Orbuzz, which are really special. They're like these small circular controllers. I'm looking around, but since I just moved, it's very hard for me to track my stuff down to like show it off.
Is that similar to the Corda? I saw you did a video with the Corda. That looked really interesting.
Yeah, Corda was like the next evolution of that. But the Orbuzz came first. They're like these little handheld, like Pokeball size controllers. One has a synth built in. The other is sample based. And they've just got 8 slices of a pie on top. And it's a capacitive touch thing. You can glide around it. You can play 8 individual notes. It's got a chord mode, a drum mode, lead mode. So that's cool. That to me is cool. It's like, okay, I can still use this, but it's still fun to interface with, and it's Bluetooth. So like I could get a couple of these going and map them to different things, X, Y. You can even like imagine like you had a drum or something and you can hit it against your hand. It's got a bump gesture that you can do. You can assign that to its own sample. But then Corda is really cool too. Corda, like, take Orba and just spread it into a long rectangle, where it's kind of emulating a guitar or a strummed instrument like a ukulele or something. But they've actually really pulled it off in, you talk about like problems to solve. I imagine somebody, if you want to strum something, like what's the best way for you to do that MIDI? Unless you have like an actual MIDI guitar, which I have that too. But like strumming, like sitting at a keyboard and strumming through a chord, that's similar, but like the same thing as like swiping, I guess.
Yeah,
but they've done something cool with Corda where it's like you've instead of having any kind of fake strings, it doesn't have any simulation of strings at all. It's just got these 6 sensors down where you would strum with a pick or something. But it's they're lights, and you can strum through each individual string one at a time. So it's cool, and it's a standalone instrument too. Like you can record on it, you can loop. And with the built-in instruments, you can upload your own instruments to it. Let me see if it's in the closet right here.
Let me pull it out real quick. Yeah, I can edit this.
And I'll say all the disclosures. Like, I don't work for Artifon or anything. I did work on a sponsored content piece with them for this, and I made a pack for the Orba thing, but like this isn't sponsored.
So is it Bluetooth?
It's Bluetooth, and then it has a speaker like in the top of it. So you can use it just as a MIDI controller, or you can use it like standalone. So I'm just going to keep it standalone for now. But yeah, Bluetooth MIDI connects wirelessly. It's got a headphone jack on it too. And you could plug it in USB-C if you wanted. But that's the like lead mode where I can just like play notes up the scale. But then like I was talking about down here, I think that's kind of where the magic is, because now I can strum those notes.
Interesting.
So it's really cool. And that's just in the lead mode. So I could switch it to the chords mode.
I think you just wrote a hit song.
Exactly.
We should sample that. Okay, cool. So now you can actually lay it flat and play it like a drum too.
Exactly. I think they picture people doing that actually more than holding it up.
Probably.
Like laying it flat like that. Like, but then being able to pick it up is also like very ergonomic and fun. Because like I said, strumming through those, I don't know. That's one of my favorite features of it.
Yeah.
Just strumming through things. Like, how do I do that?
That was a pretty cool update in the clip with 12, I thought, is they do have like an actual strum thing in their, what do they call it?
For the MIDI roll, like piano roll?
Yeah, in their actual MIDI clip. You can strum stuff now. It's part of their, not generative tools, the transformation tools.
I definitely appreciate that. I was just doing some educational stuff for BandLab, and they've got a really good strum. It's just built right in. So like all their devices, you can just turn strum on and chord on and strum up or strum down. Roly has a good implementation of that in their Equator synth too. So I'm glad that Live is catching up.
Yeah, the whole transformative tools thing in Live 12 is crazy. And Brian might go deeper into that in another episode coming up. But you've got so many toys. I think I'm actually scaling down now more than I ever have with how much gear I have. Because I'm actually trying to reduce the distractions of playing with them. Just because I have more stuff to touch doesn't mean I'm going to make more music.
Exactly. And I'm feeling the same exact way going into the new year. I want to like pare it down. Like I've already kind of started where when I first started the channel, it was just like, whoa, cool. Everybody wants to send me a MIDI controller. Awesome.
Yeah.
But like now it's like, cool. You made another 61 key keyboard. No, I don't need it. Thank you though. Like I'm all set.
Yeah.
But like, so if there's any type of innovation, like I just, I was checking out these Bluetooth, I'll grab that out of the closet. Bluetooth MIDI keyboard. Like Bluetooth is kind of for me the next thing because being wireless is huge. So let me grab.
Yeah, just, go for
it's
it.
A very basic keyboard. SMK MVave SMK2.
Have you noticed much latency?
Yeah, this is, I get a lot of comments like at people asking that. So I think I've made a couple videos now explaining the difference. One level, people don't understand the difference between Bluetooth audio and Bluetooth MIDI, so they get all confused. They're like, oh, when I use my AirPods, it doesn't work. I'm like, well, that's not the same thing.
Right.
But then, like, it is like people saying, oh, there must be latency. But all of the Bluetooth stuff that I've tested, from Roly to Artiphon to, like, this one, the MVave, like, I really don't have any problem or dropouts. It's been a long time since I've had a controller that, like, is unreliable and would drop out a lot. I think in an early version of, like, Roly's Lumi keyboard, like there would be some dropouts, but they patch it with a firmware update.
Okay,
but this is like exciting because you've like never heard of this company, right? Like who the heck is that MVave? So like my inbox gets flooded with like a bunch of these companies that I've never heard of. And then sometime around in the past year or so, I started looking at them, and like suddenly these companies, I think a lot of them are out of Asia, are suddenly making things that are competing with some of the major brands. So I always point to like Akai, Novation, Arturia, maybe Native Instruments is some of like the big controller like makers, like for this kind of form factor. And it's like, this is a like to, you know, stereotypical MIDI controller, pads, keys, and knobs, but it also has Bluetooth. Like you can just use it like wirelessly.
That's iPad convenient.
And all that. It's like so convenient. So to me, I'm like, if this company that I've never heard of, that basically nobody I know has ever heard of, can pull this off. And this is the second iteration of this one. What they pulled off, especially with this one, was having DAW control too. Because that's usually where most of the third parties fall short. It's like, I don't have transport control, but I don't have like this one even has undo. Like, and I think that's pretty dope.
That's cool.
There's a lot of like cool stuff. It's not cool, like, right? Like it's just a keyboard with pads, keys, and knobs. The fact that it's like, we're getting all these improvements, these like straight up utilitarian improvements over some of these other companies. Like, where's Akai at? Like, Akai, come on, you couldn't pull off. They tried a Bluetooth controller once and like failed miserably.
Which one was that? Do you know?
I don't know if it was an NPK or an LPK. I think it was like one of the straight up just small keyboards with no pads or anything. I think they tried to do a Bluetooth version and it's not around anymore. So I guess it didn't work out.
I have their big KeyLab one that I like. It's okay. It's not my favorite, but it works. Never give me problems. It gives you a lot of transport controls and pads and faders.
Yeah. So I just, before I moved, like a few months ago, Native Instruments sent me this, the S88.
That's their new one, right?
Yeah, this is the new one. It's really nice.
It looks nice.
The thing is, like, I always end up reviewing, I always end up reviewing like MIDI keyboards just because I said that earlier. Like, I like MIDI, like small tech and stuff. But I was like, part of that where I'm like, please don't send me another 25 key MIDI keyboard. I don't need it. I was like, send me the biggest one. Send me the 88 key. And I don't have any of the, like, I don't have any like weighted action or like real keys like that. So I figured, you know what? This time I'll go for the big one. And I got it in LA probably in September. And I wasn't able to unbox it or like put it together or set it up in my studio until I came here in Austin. And I'm super stoked that I did. I shit on Native Instruments a lot because they do a lot of sus stuff, and some of their software stuff is just like...
Some of their plugins can be real, real buggy sometimes.
Buggy and just like...
Like contacts.
I have a machine, like why I stopped using machine video, that like it was a live stream, and this live stream like got so many views, I think just because it's like a clickbaity title, I guess. But I'm just like shitting on the machine the whole time because it's just mind-boggling choices. But this keyboard, I come over here to use it, right? My computer is way over here. It's where the camera is, and I come over here to use it. But it's got like that big screen on it right here.
Nice.
Where it's like, even if I'm not using a Native Instruments plugin, it's easy to browse through all the Native Instruments stuff and all the NKS stuff. Like, I can even load up like Arturia plugins from here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but then it's got like, I can go into the DAW mode and I can do like full mixing there. And it's got record, undo, metronome on and off, loop, all that DAW control that I need. So I can be sitting over there and not interface with the computer much until I need to, really. So that's what I've been really stoked on for this big keyboard. But it does kind of blow my mind. Like, it's got a lot of great control and it's got that screen. I'm not saying I would know what to do with this space, but I did notice that in their new iteration, they've got these giant blocks of empty space.
Yeah, that's probably really nice for people who travel with it, who want a laptop there, or if they wanted, like, you know,
yeah, I mean, yeah, I put my OP1 here. So I was thinking, like, oh, okay, I guess that has some utility.
Yeah.
Put some other gear there.
It's a good looking keyboard. So you said you could load, you could load other VSTs or plugins from that thing?
They have, what is the Native Instruments thing called? NKS. What does that stand for?
I'm not
bring all your software, instruments, effects. It's kind of just a way of putting all those third party to Native Instruments, I mean, into like the packaging of Complete Control and all that. When I load up Complete Control, which is like the main hub, it's like the analog lab of Native Instruments. When I load that up, I see my Arturia plugins in there, so I can like open them up and I'm sure they do some mapping stuff in there to give you like the specific macros that you could use.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it looks like they have a bunch of other companies who create plugins updating their plugins for NKS to be compatible.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So there's a lot in here, actually.
Yeah, they have a few partners. I just knew it from my Arturia stuff being in there, but I did just pull up the list that there's a lot of other stuff in there too. But I think everybody's looking to do that one hub. Oh, I'm dying for it. Like, I don't want to open up, like, you know how, like, I don't know if you play much video games.
Like, honestly, not as much as I'd like to.
Okay. Well, for video games, right? Like, if you play on PC, you download Steam, and all the games are available in Steam, except a few outliers that you have to download a different launcher for. But like with music, it's like you need a different, you know, every company now has like an application where it's like, I have to go into this application. I have to update everything in this application. I have to use this for a download hub. It's got a different login. I hate that. I want there to be one stop shop where I can like open everything up. It's one format. It's kind of one thing, because that's a creative killer, I feel. It's like, that's why I have a bunch of plugins, but I don't use so many, because I don't want to learn all these different interfaces and do a bunch of different mappings or figure it out. You know, that's just like taking me away from making the music.
Yeah, that's fair. That makes sense. Maybe we could go through, if you had to pick, say, like your top picks for like a MIDI keyboard, maybe for like a plugin or a synth or a weird controller. This is the holiday season. This episode's actually dropping the day after Christmas. So, I mean, if you had to pick like your top favorite one or twos from the different genres or categories of stuff you featured on your channel, like what would they be?
If you're a live user, and as far as controllers go, I think there's two. Well, one is kind of inching ahead for me. I think Launch Key Mini, the Mark III, they haven't put out a new one in a while, but the mini one, that is a great controller because you can go pretty hands-free in creating in live with that controller. You can do session clips, launching clips, recording. It's got Capture MIDI. That's probably a really good implementation of a live controller. It's probably the best implementation that's out right now for controlling Ableton Live specifically. Okay. And then Akai also has the APC Mini. So that's a case where if you don't care about playing drums on drum pads and you want like a little session grid on your controller, I did a session with that, kind of like a solo performance performing on that controller. And you could do a lot with that cool. little MIDI controller. So those two are probably the current reigning champs at the moment for live control, especially. And then we were just talking about Native Instruments stuff. With this keyboard, or like with any controller that you might have, they've got this Noir piano instrument, this contact instrument. And it's this pretty, it's not your typical piano. Like you're not going to get your classic grand piano sound out of it. You might be able to. It's more of like a piano with a lot of character, and it's called Noir. So I guess it's got like a dark character to it, where you're going to get a lot of the piano noises in it. You know what I mean? Like felt hammer action and like the creaking of the wood of the piano. There's even a slider in it for like the player of the piano. There'll be like breaths in there and stuff, or like shifting. It's really organic sounding piano thing. But there's this other layer to it called Particles, where it's doing a granular kind of thing in the background. Not really some kind of like granular delay, I assume, is what it's doing in the background. Particle. So you're just playing piano and it's kind of generating these other notes around it. I'm not sure if it's MIDI or if it's actual audio processing or a combination of the two. A really unique piano plugin. And then that made me think of one other plugin that I really like called Fragments by Arturia. That's another granular thing.
Fragments is cool.
You can get really cool sounds out of that. And what I also really like the UI, because you can see pretty much exactly what's happening. Basically, you can see the audio feeding into it. And as it pulls grains from that audio, you can see that happening in real time with the waveform. You can see what it's picking out. Like cool. There's this one preset, responsive reverses. Yeah. And I pretty much pull that up. And that's similar to like pitch loop 89, which we mentioned earlier. Yeah. Fragments is another thing where it's like, I'm going to grab that, the responsive reverses preset. And that's another thing to just add this really cool, mystical, ghostly character to a sound.
Yeah. Do you ever play with Portal from Output?
I haven't, and yeah, that's I don't know if you know who Mondo Loops is all the time. He's like this amazing lo-fi producer.
Yeah.
He uses that all the time in his videos. And every time I see him use it, I'm like, should I get that? Like, do I need that?
Hit up Output. Maybe you'll get it for free. I mean, it's one of my favorite plugins, especially for vocal effects. If you want to do something with a vocal, Portal's my go-to for sure.
I love that user interface. The like big circle and the like, yeah.
You can get pretty surgical inside of it too, but it's still user friendly all around, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. He gets a really cool sound of it. Yeah. Dang, I should check it out. I love all that atmospheric, weird, ghostly stuff, you know?
Yeah. Even for bass sounds, like if you do some weird, heavy bass, like you can really smash stuff with that.
You know, we were talking about live devices, and I should mention that like amp, cab, pedal for guitar stuff. Like I use a lot of guitar rig, but those three, like especially if I'm working on push three, you can get a really good guitar sound with those stock devices.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know?
And go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, do you know who Cloud Chord is?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He releases some really solid stock Ableton Live effects, like effect racks that he builds with just pedal and amp and stuff like that.
Yeah. It sounds really good. I'm actually like, I just remember the struggle of trying to get a direct in guitar to sound good. Mm-hmm. And now between those devices and like I said, the guitar rig stuff, I'm even using like a amp emulation on the 404. I just used that for a song that I was working on. And that sounds pretty good too. built into Live amp, pedal, cab, all that. Can get that sounding great.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's endless. There's a lot of toys out there we could keep going on about. I guess as a content creator, like what's next for you, or just as an artist, like what's coming down the pipeline for you? What projects are you stoked about?
So I was working on an album earlier. Well, I released my ambient album, and then I started working on something I'm more known for, like a beat album that's a little higher energy than my normal like slower lo-fi stuff. I was working on that for a while, and then the big like community event every year called Beattober that takes over my life for about the whole month of October and about 3 weeks before that and 3 weeks after that. So the album that I was working on, I kind of like paused. So I really want to finish that up at the beginning of 2024.
Yeah.
And I really want to, I just read this article and I can send it to you so you can maybe include it in the show notes, but
sure.
About this Japanese ambient artist who releases an album every single day. An album every single day.
Sounds exhausting.
It sounds exhausting, but to me, I hear that and I feel like really inspired because I'm thinking like, if you can do an album in a day, could I do a song every day? Could I do a song a week? Could I do an album in a week?
Yeah.
Or like something like that. So with the thing is like, he's not just doing that. It's not like he has like some Saudi Arabian funder or something that allows him to do that or anything. The punchline on that is like, he creates these ambient albums and he's making like enough to cover his life expenses because he gets playlisted on Spotify. Like it's very like playlist friendly music.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
So it's sustainable, which is that's something I'm very interested in. It's like having a life and a career in music that is sustainable.
Yeah.
But so that's inspiring to me. And with my new like lifestyle, having just moved to Texas, I am able to go a little slower, I think. So like, I don't think I'll be making as many videos in the coming year. I want to be making more music and be doing more like creative stuff.
Yeah.
I started a second channel where I'm doing like, I'm like kind of capturing my life and like these silent vlogs, but I want to have a little bit of a slower life that's focused more on the art rather than having to always make an explicit, like explaining everything video. Cause I feel like, yeah, I can only go so far and everything's like in balance, like a pendulum. It's like, okay, I did a lot with the instruction, a lot with the tutorials or whatever. I need that pendulum to swing back to the making stuff. Hmm. And maybe it'll swing back the other way later. But I think that's in the coming years, like trying to go a little slower, but also put time into longer form stuff.
Yeah, maybe you can just have AI do all the content, like YouTube stuff, and then you can just do music. That's the
dream,
right?
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I set up this room to like be like I can record anything, and like there's cameras like above me, there's cameras above this desk, and it's like, so I want to be able to walk in and hit record on everything. So if I could, I would record everything that I was doing and then like send it off to an editor, like, can you cut, like, oh, this turned out great, can you cut this together or something.
Yeah, there's something called Autopod. It's a Premiere extension. I don't know. What do you use to edit your videos?
I use Final Cut, which progressively regretting more and more every single day.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, just because like you're about to mention something really cool probably that Premiere has, and like Final Cut doesn't have anything like that. Like Final Cut doesn't get any of the cool stuff.
Yeah. Adobe has invested so much in AI the last year. It's been wild. Like I've talked about this on the podcast 100 times. They have their podcast on adobe.com, I think is what it is. But it's like audio restoration, and it's the best I've ever heard from any plugin out there. It's insane and it's free.
That's cool.
But then there's like their video editing stuff is getting really good. And there's the Autopod. It's an extension in Premiere. And I use that for multicam editing for the podcast. So if you could assign like an audio feed for each camera somehow, you could have it automatically do cuts for you.
That's cool. I have a hardware version of that, but the thing that I use to stream is like a video mixer. It'll cut between audio sources, but then it'll also like auto switch between things.
That's nice.
Because
you use the Stream Deck, right? For that kind of stuff.
Well, I use a Roland VR1 HD, which I kind of met. I just did a studio tour of my LA studio, home studio, and I kind of explained all this.
I watched
that.
Yeah, I actually watched that. It was a good video.
Oh, thank you. I was going to say it's like very dry and boring, but it's like
a
box that takes in all the video and all the audio sources. And like, that's what I use to switch. And it's like all all hardware. So like the computer doesn't have to work as hard, basically.
Yeah, I actually was using that exact switcher for the podcast, but it was being really weird because you're running that into a PC and I was running it into an Intel Mac laptop and it did not like OBS. OBS was being real weird with it for whatever reason.
Man, that's another like war story is like when COVID happened and I was trying to figure out all this live streaming stuff and I bought this live streaming mixer for probably double what it retails for now.
Everybody like, did. Yeah. It's crazy. It's
like trying to get it all to work and like trying to get it to work on a Mac. And thankfully now I just had this gaming PC that I don't even really use that I use it just for streaming.
Yeah, you know, that's like, ideal for sure. I had like a Hackintosh because like it was so expensive. I was like, I'm just going to pay my friend to like hack a computer and build it for me from scratch. And that was my streaming computer only. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because like all this stuff we're talking about, like streaming and video, as somebody like you do the podcast, but you don't do like a ton with other like type of social media stuff. Like
I used to.
Used to more?
I used to more than I do now.
I was wondering, like, because I'm fascinated by this, and that's what I was talking about with the Japanese ambient artist, like being able to sustain his career. Like, what is for you like a way to sustain your time in music, like as an artist? Like, how do you... I'm not trying to say like, how do you make your money? But I'm basically saying like, how do you sustain your life as an artist like, and not pull your hair out?
Mostly just OnlyFans when I'm not looking nice. No, definitely not. But shout out to anybody who does. Good for you. I personally right now am working with, this might be super premature, but I'll say it anyway. There's an app called Bamboo. And so I'm thinking about how to monetize the podcast and just thinking through like, what would people really want? Like what value could I provide for them having some kind of membership base? So that's something I'm thinking about the future as of currently right now. I don't make a ton of money off my music streams. I just do it for the love. And, you know, like if...
Who does besides Taylor Swift?
Yeah, exactly. Good for Taylor. Yeah, I mean, right now the podcast sponsorships have been really good. I've been really blessed by like Lewitt. They just made this mic I'm using right now. They sent to me and I've done mixed paid sponsorships.
I was
going to
say, you sound great.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, this is a really cool tube mic. I don't know how well I could show you because it's really locked into the stand. Wow. Yeah, the tube's actually glowing. There's a glass cage in the front of the mic. And it'd be really hard to show you this. I don't know how well you could see that. Can you see that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. So that it's glowing and you can, it's called PureTube. This is the coolest mic I think I've ever owned or may ever have. But yeah, so like sponsorships have been really great in supporting the podcast as far as like monetization. You know, I run my live producers online website, which I'm really sad about live 12 because I'm going to have to redo most of my videos for the course. Well, you have your own courses too, right? Don't you?
Well, I do. Any of the course content I have is on YouTube and it's for free. So, and then I get sponsors for that. Like, so similar to what you're saying, like with the podcast, like if I can make, cause what'll happen is I'll get a sponsor. I'll make this video. I'll make a course or a series, Ableton Live series. So I'll get like a sponsor for each spot that in a month, and I'll make one video per month for a while. And then the video will make, you know, AdSense money too. Well, if it does well, it'll make AdSense money. So it's kind of like a cool double dip plus affiliate links in the description. So
sure.
We're putting the content for free has worked really well from that position. But I get money from like the ad revenue from the channel. So that's the AdSense every month. And then I have YouTube memberships as well.
Okay.
Which I think that's a big one. Like you mentioned, like doing like memberships and stuff like that. I think I would like to lean more heavily into that, like doing more bespoke, thoughtful content for a smaller group of people rather than doing a bunch of like wide, broad content to cast a wide net and make more ad revenue. Like I think I want to go deeper into the membership side and then sponsorships with that. So like if that all adds up to an affiliate links. So that big collection, which I would consider the YouTube channel, I'd say that's a bulk of my income. And then I do a little bit of other creative work on the side for nonprofits and things like that.
Do you one-on-one lessons?
I do them once a year. I want to find a way to do mentorship and not like turn it into the content for the sake of turning it into content, but I think there'd be a lot of value. I want to do like some boot camp thing or something where I take a bunch of like people where they don't have to pay, where there's a sponsor involved that pays for the series that I take on like five small artists from around the world that basically don't make their own music yet, or they want to, and then kind of take them from zero to like develop them as artists. That would be my dream to do. I do the one-on-one lesson thing once a year, but to me, it's just like, I like doing them. I like meeting with students and hearing directly, but it's a lot of like repetition. And I feel like I want to be like, okay, just go watch this video. You want to know how to do this? Go watch this video. You don't need me for an hour. And a lot of people that want me for an hour, they don't need me for an hour. You know what I mean? Not to say anything bad about the students. I mean, everybody's just trying to learn in their own way.
Sure.
We talked earlier about how hard it is to make your own curriculum basically with free content. But I don't want to be in the business of doing one-on-one lessons for full time or even part time, because that's like a time suck.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's a lot.
Yeah. To me, I'd rather make everything public and like, it's okay. How can we go deeper? Like how can we do something better than me just showing you how to do sampling in live or something? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been thinking about and playing with the idea of using this Bamboo app, which I think they're also looking for like content creators to test it out. So if you're interested, I could probably connect.
What's the, like, is it like a Patreon thing? Like what's the pitch?
So yeah, basically it's a social, they're calling it a social media app, but I think it's got more potential than that. It's like a website and social media had a baby. So like you can have different feeds, and a feed is very similar to like an Instagram feed, but you can like title it every single feed and create multiple feeds and make them like either closed, so you could have like monetization access to certain feeds, or have public feeds. And then you could also use it as a tool for all kinds of different stuff. So it's like almost kind of like a blog, but more well organized.
Sure.
And that has like a feed for people to interact with you. You can like tag individual feeds as coming. It's like a better Patreon that doesn't take as much money.
That's cool.
Yeah, but it's also public. Because I think Patreon for the most part is like private, right? Like I don't think you just have a public facing Patreon for the world.
I think now they have now pivoted to that, where it's like you have paid members and then you can also have a public feed where you can have free members basically. So you can have a free membership feed. I switched to YouTube member. I did Patreon for a little while to like not a lot of success. And now I do YouTube memberships and it's a lot more successful because of the live streaming aspect and the community aspect. And I can do members only live streams, members only videos. People can like become a member and then get access to like a playlist of workshops that are members only. Like it's a lot easier to pitch, but I do miss some of the stuff that Patreon has going on. Like, you know, John Makes Beats.
No,
that's his YouTube channel name. You should check him out. He's like a legendary like hip-hop producer, hip-hop artist, but he just started making content on YouTube, but not just, but for a little while. He has a Patreon, and I really am fascinated by his model, because he'll make beats in his YouTube videos and then he releases them on Patreon. So like when you go to, it's like having a private music streaming service basically, because now with Patreon you can have a feed that goes directly to Spotify too. So if you're his patron, you can load it up, because mostly it's like podcasts that use Spotify, that use the Patreon thing. So they were doing that for integration for podcasts, where you could get the bonus episode directly in Spotify. You don't have to go to the Patreon app. But I think that's fascinating to have like a little private catalog of music. That's a way better model. Like I would rather make a bunch of music and release it to people that are paying for it, like that are supporting me as an artist, basically. And like have a little private catalog. I could do that with members only videos, but obviously that's not the same thing as having it built into Spotify. But
yeah, I know a couple artists that are doing something very similar. They have like their own private gated community that they make exclusive releases and albums for, and then they still drip like singles every once in a while on their regular Spotify just for exposure and stuff.
I think that's the move, because like we were talking about earlier, like Spotify is, it's not like generating an income. Not that everything has to be about money, but again, it does need to be sustainable. And I hope the audience understands that, especially if they're aspiring artists, like you want to find a way to sustain making your art. Like we can't all just say like, oh, just do it for free because I love it. It's like, yeah, we all love it, but we also want to be able to do it on a regular basis.
100%, man. Like, I think one of the best things I ever did for my own music and the podcast and everything I do now is just getting better at marketing and business.
Yeah.
It's like, and I still have a lot to learn for sure, but like, I'm so glad I put in the work and to learn that stuff in advertising and ads and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, me too. Like YouTube has changed so much since I first started, and I'm not keeping up with the trends and the you know, the YouTube algorithm stuff in the same way that it did when the channel just started. And I'm okay with that. I can either go harder and figure out, okay, what is new YouTube, or I can kind of establish a new model for what I want to do, which to me, I want to get to more of those people that are the diehards. That's an age old thing. It's like if you have 1,000 fans that'll pay $100 a year or something like that, you know, whatever it is. I always had that mindset. It's like, I am so not interested in trying to be like a Billboard Hot 100, like best-selling producer, or like produce for a giant artist and like try to me, that's like playing the lottery. It's like, okay, I'll buy a scratch ticket every day and just hope that I make $1 million. I don't want to do that. I want to work every day and like make enough to sustain and make enough to constantly improve. And approach it that way. And to me, that's like building community, finding the people that support you, finding a way to support them, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think like if people resonate with you, I mean, they're wanting to pay you, they want to support you. And so it's good for artists to give their fans the opportunity to do that, because a lot of people don't.
Yeah. And I want to over deliver too. Like I'm self-conscious like about, you know, my membership thing. It's like, I want to make sure, okay, like when you sign up to become a member, like right now, you're going to get all these free downloads. You're going to go be able to watch these workshops. And and then next month we're going to do a track review. So I'm going to give you feedback on your music. Like I want to make sure that that's all happening, because like people giving you $2, $5, $10 a month, like just like they're paying you like you're their internet bill or their cable bill or whatever, like on a subscription, that's huge. Like that to me is the only way forward in our current like landscape of how the music industry is. Like people are going to have to support the artists that they like. They can't just pay for Spotify every month and say, yeah, I listen to this artist all month, so I hope they're getting their cut, because they're not.
I saw Weird Al made a post on Instagram a couple of weeks ago when everybody was releasing their Spotify Wrapped, you know, like this is how many streams I had this year or whatever. He's like, hey, I just want to thank everybody for my like 12 million streams or whatever. You know, I made $10, so now I can buy breakfast tomorrow. And he's just like making fun of it so bad.
Yeah. So it's like the power is in the hands of the community. Like if you find somebody or a collection, like if you have a budget for this, I think the more people get used to the idea of Patreon and Twitch subscriptions and membership models, people will be like, I'm going to spend $15 a month on, you know, three different artists or five or like five different artists. And even that, like people got bills to pay, you know, like things aren't getting better. I don't know if you noticed. There's always a recession around the corner.
Everything's more expensive all the time.
Yeah. Things aren't getting, I just moved to Texas and I came from California. I went from $7 a gallon gas to $2.30 over here.
I definitely
believe
that. But
that's to say, like, if it's between you getting your filling up your gas tank or supporting your artist, like, I don't blame you for like not having money to spend on like your favorite artist when you can just stream them for free or watch a YouTube video for free or whatever. Like, so anybody that does take the time and budget and put it towards that, so thankful for that. Even if it's not to me, if it's just to some artist that you like, or some podcast that you like, or some whatever it is, if you're supporting a creator directly, like that's the only way we're all going to survive this, I think.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I think the hardest part is just finding those people, really, because there are people out there that want to support you no matter how big or small you are, and being consistent too. And I think you're a great example of that, of somebody who's been really consistent and releasing content, and you provide value that people want to support you with. So
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Dude, well, that might be a good time to wrap it up. We've been going at it for an hour and a half, so want to respect your time, man. But where's the best place for people to connect with you if they want to connect with you and support you?
Definitely Instagram, Taetro, T-A-E-T-R-O. That's me on Instagram. My YouTube channel, obviously, Taetro. I just started a vlog channel as well, so type in Taetro Vlogs if you want to see some cool experiences from my life, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, tutorials, cool, fun content on all those places, T-A-E-T-R-O. Come check me out.
Yeah, dude. Thanks. It's you like Nick more than you do Nicholas, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, just making sure. I never want to be that guy that calls somebody by like the name.
It's because it's my email. So I do know a lot of people that just hit me with the Nicholas once in a while. It's like, oh, it's because it's my email.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Well, everybody go check out Taetro. give Nick some love, open your hearts, open your wallets, give him some membership money. And
give it to the podcast, or go find your favorite creator or favorite artist or somebody. Like, spend $2 a month on your favorite artist and forget that you're even getting billed for it.
Yeah, that's right. Just forget about it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, just forget about it. It's like taxes.
It'll go away eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on, dude. Well, Nick, it's good hanging out with you, man. If you ever come to Denver, hit me up and I'll show you a good time. Enjoy Austin. And hit up Alberto. If you need his contact info,
sure,
let me know. I'm sure he'd love to hear from you.
For sure. And if you ever come to Austin, please let me know.
Dude, I will. Probably in the winter, because that's when I hate the weather when it's cold. Yeah. So yeah. Sick. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast. Do me a huge favor if you would and hit that follow or subscribe button wherever you're listening to the podcast. If you don't hate the podcast, please leave a 5-star review. It would help me out a ton. Don't forget to check back on Tuesdays for new episodes. I plan on cranking out a lot more in the upcoming future. Also, if you didn't know, on Spotify, if you click on an episode on mobile, you can interact there and you can tell me what you think about this episode and other episodes, and it would be great to hear from you and see what you're thinking about the podcast. If you want to be the first to get new episodes and stay updated and get free new devices and sample packs and other stuff that I'll be sending out in the future, join the newsletter. Just go to liveproducersonline.com/newsletter and or check out the links in the show notes. Make sure to give this guest a follow on the socials, give them some love for spending their time. And once again, thanks for listening to the podcast. I will see you next time. Later.